all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way.
Welcome to Rabble Rants. I'm Santiago Helo Quintero, and alongside Jesse McLean, we're going to unpack the stories that have us most riled up and challenge the narratives around them. Before we get into our rant on the U.S. move to build a seaport in Gaza, we have an easy call to action for you. We're still trying to expand our reach, so while you're listening to this episode, share our feed with a friend or a like-minded coworker. We got two podcasts now, Blueprints of Disruption and These Rabble Rants, which you can find on their own feed.
All right, so hopefully by now folks have heard of Biden's plan to build a seaport. That's what we're going to call it throughout the episode. But we'll also speculate as to what its intentions are. So in order to have this discussion, we're going to kind of set the stage, what's happening in Gaza, especially as it pertains to geopolitics and humanitarian aid. So again, I'm sure people have also seen the airdrops and the photo ops that go along with all of this. I know Canada has sent some, the EU has resumed some aid, and all of them are sending politicians over to both Israel and Palestine. I don't know if we'll get into Jolie, but she has been over there posing with everyone she can. And some aid drops have been going in, some trucks of humanitarian aid have been arriving, but not without issues. I mean, the U.S. and Jordanian military are dropping the most amount of aid by air, and they made a big deal out of this one drop that was like 11,500 meals. And, you know, that deserved press and the amount of photography involved and follow-up. And you're talking about like feeding less than 4,000 people for a day. There's 700,000 people in Gaza right now that are starving. And so whatever they're doing right now sure as fuck isn't working. You know, you see the trucks that are trying to get in through the like one or two crossings that are open. And open is a loose term. And some of them are being blocked by Israeli citizens. They're using this whole, Hamas will just steal the aid and use it to rebuild. And in the meantime, yeah, folks are actually, you've got a famine on your hands. One can't mention the aid being delivered into Gaza without also mentioning the flour massacres. That's plural now. We did report on the last one that was on February 29th that killed 112 people, wounded 750. But they have been repeated over and over again. The most recent, I believe, was March 14th with over 50 casualties. There's one location, the Kuwait roundabout in Gaza City, that has been repeatedly targeted as people are approaching these humanitarian aid convoys. The fact that the world is standing by as Israel massacres people that are trying to get food, nothing really surprises me anymore, but I feel like that becomes like a new low globally, surely.
Yeah, I feel like, having looked at history, if they wanted to get more aid in, they could easily, you know. Instead of airdrops, you put a French, U.S., whatever you want, ship directly to Gaza, or you go in directly on the ground to deliver aid. It is doable. Because Israel cannot afford to directly attack any Western powers, right? So when you see these airdrops killing people because they're not dropped properly, to me it feels like, I mean, back in the day, like whatever happened to, and you know, we talk about how the UN isn't particularly
effective,
good at what they do, but what happened to UN peacekeepers? Wasn't that something that Canada is supposed to be super proud of? Lester B. Pearson and whatever. Why is it not peacekeeping missions to go and deliver aid?
Well, this one's a little bit more complicated. Like, Gaza's got a unique kind of geography that doesn't allow for really large ships without a pier. And the closest pier to most of the people is one that was built in Khan Yunis like 10 years ago, I think it was. But it's now obviously not faring very well. If anybody's seen aerial footage of Gaza, there's very little infrastructure left that would allow that kind of facilitation. So jetties would be required. It definitely still is possible. I mean, the people of Gaza fish. It is accessible by boat. However, we also have to remember there is an Israeli marine embargo. So that's where it gets a little bit complicated, because anything that we're going to discuss moving forward likely in a way contravenes this blockade of Gaza that's been going on far longer than the hostilities since October 7th that most people are focused on. So it's possible logistically, but politically, is it? So we're seeing a bit of a shift, though. Obviously, I think just the level of carnage and the political backlash, particularly that Biden's facing. So for folks who don't follow U.S. politics, we don't really all that much either. But you must know that there's an election brewing, and it's decided it will be between Biden and Trump. And a large portion of Biden's base is very upset with him. They're casting undecided ballots. They're showing real displeasure in the only candidate that they have available to be Trump. And so this is a political crisis for Biden that he has to navigate. And I think we're seeing the narrative shift and their suggestion of building a seaport that comes into play. I think that has a lot to do with these political games and nothing really kind of grounded in actually delivering essential humanitarian aid, because Israel could be letting in a whole bunch more aid right now, right? There are more crossings than the ones that are open. Israel claims that they're not blocking any of them. We know that that's not true. There are aid ships, like flotillas, that have attempted to come and bring aid to Gaza before. Now, I don't think anybody's attempted the crossing just because the level of military activity in the area. But there is an aid ship that is stocked and now off the coast of Gaza, sent by a charity in Spain. Open Arms is the name of the ship and the charity. It's got 200 tons of food and people can actually see it on the beaches of Gaza, which has got to be fucking torture. But it's the need for kind of jetties to take them back and forth. And Israel, of course, the UN reminded them and they just ignored it. All of the rulings from January 31st have meant nothing to Israel. They know what their obligations are under humanitarian law and they're not meeting any of them. In fact, they're the ones creating the situation. So, but this narrative shift, I want to focus on that because I think it brings us to the seaport.
Wasn't there supposed to be like a 1 month deadline before they had to check back in? Has that happened?
So the ICJ ruling was actually that Israel must submit a report to them on how it intends to address all the issues raised and deliver the humanitarian aid within a month. So that has come and
gone. That's long past.
That's come and gone. But I think when the ruling came down, we all knew that Israel never intended to follow up on anything. They denied the legitimacy of the court, and even our own politicians kind of scoffed at the ruling. So they knew the global community would not hold them accountable to that. So I think it's hit a fever pitch. And one of the things that really surprised me is when CNN did a recent report on the situation in Palestine, and in their fancy newsroom with their, what do you call it, like digitalized walls, they threw up pictures or images representing all of the dead Palestinian children that had been killed since October 7th. And it wrapped around. You know, it was a very gut-wrenching piece. It was shocking because it was CNN. And I think it was kind of evidence that what we've been talking about before of it becoming impossible to defend the Zionist narrative now. And so there needs to be alternatives, right? The media can't keep doing it, but surely they see they're walking step in step with the U.S. government and the military establishment there and their plans. So it was like boom, boom, boom. So as soon as we posted up about the CNN kind of narrative shift, folks were in the replies going, don't buy it. There's always a purpose to this, and the purpose is the seaport. So the reason you're seeing the U.S. media shift their talking points and start to focus on the, and not just the U.S. media, but BBC is now talking about the inhumane treatment of medical staff in Gaza at the hands of the IDF. A lot more scathing reports are coming out, honest reporting on the human rights abuses of Israel. And so what is the purpose of this? to justify the seaport. And as we talk about the seaport, we'll start to speculate why. Why is this such an emergency military operation, as Biden described it in his State of the Union address? Right, he not only called for the seaport to be built, but for a 6-week ceasefire, very specific. And just so happens that it takes about a month to build this type of pier that they are proposing. That's convenient. Because it will be in a very precarious spot, right? We're talking about just off the coast of Gaza. This is where the Israeli army is pounding Rafah, Gaza City still, and Khan Yunis with airstrikes. And their ground troops are also in the area. Presumably, also Hamas troops are in the area. And so it's not a very safe security spot. And so I think this is really self-serving ceasefire because he couldn't afford to lose U.S. troops to this.
No. Well, I instantly start thinking about oil, right? Because didn't they discover a bunch of oil off the coast of Gaza?
Natural gas, LNG.
I hate history sometimes, right? Like, it does just feel like the... Look, like, we can only operate off of what we know, but U.S. acting out of the best interest of humanity is not exactly something that ever happens, so...
No, I was saying, like, even my mom, I said, Mom, she goes, what are you recording on? I go, well, the U.S. wants to build a seaport in Gaza. They say it's for food. And she goes, oh, my God. Like, she knew. She'd watched enough paramilitary operations in Hollywood to know that they're never up to any good. But we don't need to speculate. We've got a few facts to help people get there themselves.
And it's like, you know, look, 6-week ceasefire for self-serving interests still saves people. That's the thing, is that we're in a position right now where, you know, it's not exactly like I'm out here saying, no, don't give us a ceasefire, we don't want to see, like, you know, yeah, stop killing people, that would be great, but can it not be for self-serving interests,
and can it be permanent?
Yeah,
right. And not a ceasefire, but an end to the occupation is really, I know what you mean, like, there are ideals and there are what we can get right now from war hawks. So the fact that the U.S. is offering or suggesting a ceasefire, you know, might assist in the situation. But I think when we're looking long term at what the establishment of a seaport by U.S. military personnel in Palestine would mean, even in that region, starts to shift your perspective perhaps a little bit. And I think it's because of this urgency that they're allowed to mask this ulterior motive, right? Because how can we say no? If you were going to deliver and stop the starvation deaths of people who've already experienced such trauma, then you're like, yes, yes, of course, bring them food, like, any means necessary. And then we fall into that trap where you can't undo that. The U.S. will never remove that access to their seaport. And we've seen what they've done to other nations where they've gone in to provide assistance and they've never been out from under their thumb again. You'd probably just change one occupier for another, to be honest. But, like, let's look at what we know about the seaport. Because, yeah, face value, I don't believe anything, especially with the U.S. is still supplying Israel with weapons. Now, Canada, we've just found out, it's been reported that since January 8th, so almost a month before the ICJ ruling, Canada's government put a pause on the permits people need in order to ship technology. They call it non-lethal weaponry. We've talked about that before. It absolutely does kill people, but it includes, like, night vision goggles and all this other stuff. They've not been able to ship that from Canada since January 8th. So there has, in fact, been an informal embargo put on them. But yeah, so in the State of the Union, Biden, he mentions this seaport for, like, the first time. And 36 hours later, the General Frank S. Bessin is set sail from Virginia on its way to Gaza to build the seaport. And folks from inside Gaza will show video footage of bulldozers, other heavy machinery entering Gaza for the purpose of building the seaport and not of rescuing people from under the rubble or any kind of rebuilding efforts. So clearly those trucks had no trouble getting in and getting past. They do say it's for humanitarian aid. They're specific that it'd be food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. So they're basically going to sustain this refugee camp that's been established in Rafah, expanded, rather, in Rafah. They're calling an emergency military mission, as though 160 days in, this wasn't already thought of or a possibility. But it's a no boots on the ground kind of promise, although it will take a 1,000 U.S. military personnel to build it. They say they've got all this technology that won't allow them to actually get out of the water. So somehow no boots on the ground is really quite literal. They will be just off the shore of Gaza in full reach of them, but won't actually step foot on shore, presumably. It's going to be like a floating pier. There's photos of it all over the internet. We'll link some things to it. It's what's going to allow larger ships and larger equipment to be offloaded. So not just trucks and aid. This is something that the military regularly builds for ground invasions by sea. Get ground troops by sea. And all of a sudden, they're just going to apply it to humanitarian efforts only. But it's not just the U.S. military's involvement that makes it sus. Like, that's enough sometimes, right? But it's been sourced out largely to this company called Fogbow, F-O-G-B-O-W. And it's this company's makeup that really kind of sells the story of what their likely intentions are for this marine access that the EU is also on hand with, right? They've opened up a new sea route that comes from Cyprus, which is like the closest EU nation. So they'll be able to also take credit for this. So Fogbow LLC, it's a pretty new company. It only established in 2022. It's registered in Wyoming and almost nobody knows anything about it. Well, that's changing quickly. But I mean, if you go to their website, they don't give out a whole lot of information. There's not a lot of previous articles or data on the internet for this company, but basically it's headed by a bunch of spooks. Its CEO is Carl Sam Mundy. This is like a retired commander of the U.S. Marine Central Command. And then the other folks that run this company, Mark Mulroy, former CIA paramilitary officer. He's also the former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Trump, specifically for the Middle East. He's also got a relationship with the Biden administration. He helped smooth over the transition that Trump didn't want to happen. So he's in close with both sides of the political elites. That asshole also co-directed something called the Yemen Steering Initiative. And this is an important point. This is like a $50 billion initiative. And they've been tasked with establishing democracy and stability in Yemen. I don't know what episode I need to refer you all to, but I mean, even just in our eulogy of Brian Mulroney, we explain neoliberalism and the establishing of democracies in, you know, so-called third world countries and what it really is about is establishing economic presence there, big capital presence, and it's just heightened exploitation of workers in those areas. That's really all it ends up being. And in Yemen, you have the U.S. holding up their chosen government, and that allows them to delegitimize the Houthi rebels. So that's a complicated political situation. But these are the kinds of people now that are going to be building this pier. They have never done anything humanitarian in their life. They have advised politicians specifically on how to strengthen their national security through a relationship with Israel. All right. All of them have ties to an institution called JINSA. This is the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. And it's a training program for like really high ranking military officials. I'm talking generals and admirals. And they go in, they meet the Israeli prime minister. They talk to Mossad. They are taught and it's emphasized how important U.S. national security is to Israel and vice versa and how they're intertwined. And these are the folks that actually run these junkets that essentially dictate military policies, especially as it relates to the Middle East. The more you know about this company and the people that are building the pier, the more you understand that it's a complete military strategic move for the United States in the region and nothing else. They may feed Gazans. They'll have to. I mean, if they build the pier, I don't know what kind of malarkey they could make up to somehow then justify allowing that starvation to occur. But this is going to be a huge geopolitical shift in the region. So does it change how you feel about the bridge at all when you hear about the company building it?
In what way? Because I'm not exactly feeling good about any of it, right?
Well, I think, like, because you kind of express, like, well, we need to feed people. And that is true. And a peer would deliver that. And I think a lot of people will give it a green light mentally or not resist it so much because it likely would mean more food, more medicine going to people who need it so desperately. I think, like you said, like if they really wanted aid there, like ground aid is the most efficient way to deliver it. And we do have global forces. There are means to force Israel's hand into actually opening these routes and securing aid where it needs to go. I feel like this is the most expensive and politically tumultuous way to possibly deliver aid.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a situation where given the absence of like truly compassionate humanitarian ways of doing this, realistic ones, you know what I mean, is given the state of geopolitical politics and everything. It's kind of a situation where as long as we're relying on powerful nations with the interests of powerful nations to solve the problem, you're gonna get these, you know, double-edged solutions to things where, because at the end of the day, like that's the thing, is it doesn't really benefit. Like what do Western powers have to gain from genociding the Palestinian population, really? You know, I'm not talking Israel here, I'm talking everyone else. What do they have to gain from a genocide?
The control of the natural resources in that area.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe Israel wants a control of it.
But I think that's what this is about. I think once the U.S. establishes this military presence or this access, because in a way, Israel might be going along with it. This might be in consultation with them to a degree, but there's no doubt that it undermines their blockade. It undermines their position. And it undoubtedly creates a stronghold for the U.S. in a way that I think that they maybe can stop begging Israel to behave a certain way. Like there's this political dance that seems to be going on between Biden and Bibi, and it's really costing Biden. And if we know anything about U.S. politicians, is that they will risk almost anything sometimes to simply win elections. It's incredible the things that they'll do to distract from whatnot. But they're in a desperate situation here where they're made to look so bad, and the world has turned on Israel. They cannot defend the Zionist ideology anymore. So they need to have a different reason to be in the Middle East. Remember when Biden was like, if there wasn't an Israel, we'd invent an Israel. So he invents it in the form of Palestine. Even that would be like best case scenario out of the build of the seaport is that it helps the U.S. to secure statehood for Palestine. But that would definitely be under a U.S. type rule. Like they would not simply allow that access. And I don't even think that they would go for that. I think this is a way of the U.S. to just dominate the region again, more definitively, rather than having to use Israel as a proxy, because they do seem to have lost control of that state, at least under Netanyahu. And like you said, there's U.S. politicians calling for an election. So they're frustrated with looking bad through Israel. You know, it's kind of gotten out of hand for them.
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, the U.S., they're not helping Israel. They don't support Israel because they believe in the Zionist project, or at least not the powerful. It's always, what can we gain from this? You know, Biden talks about how if there wasn't an Israel, they would have to create one so that they can have a powerful ally in the Middle East. And I mean, sure, there's a decent amount of Christian Zionist evangelicals who are very powerful, who are doing this out of a belief in the Zionist project, but they're doing it for very selfish reasons because they believe it'll bring upon, you know, end of days and whatnot. But yeah, there's always something to gain from this. And so just looking at this, it's very much, it's a time when I get a little, I don't know, confused about what we even asked for, because we want a ceasefire. We want an end to the occupation. We want all of these things. How do we get it? Well, if we're asking the powerful countries, the only way that that's going to happen is if they have something to gain from it, right?
Or too much to lose. I think like a lot of the pressure that people are building at the grassroots level is to weigh on the other side. So although you might lose that gain, you know, whatever that economic gain might have been from aiding Israel's genocide. But you also have like that political capital loss. So there has to be a balance, and it's trying to create that threshold where it's just not politically safe anymore. No matter how much you have to win, you've lost too much. You've lost your base. Like Biden is an issue, but people can see it with Trudeau, right? In the polls, slipping so terribly below Poiliev. And it was a gamble that they really have lost on. And unfortunately, in both Canada and U.S. elections, will likely end up with the ultimate evils. We've had these discussions many times before, but because these folks have held on for so long and made bad calls, we're going to end up with even shittier governments.
There's a certain sense, and I don't exactly, like, I'm not happy to convey this sense, but there's a certain helplessness where it's like, well, what the fuck do we do, you know? I don't exactly know, barring a paradigm shift of, I don't know. I really, like, the U.S. is going to make some money here. They're going to gain further control, and, you know, it's a useful lesson. It's a useful lesson, but we've had plenty of useful lessons, you know? And that's the frustrating thing, is like looking at all of these terrible conflicts, terrible genocides, terrible things all over the world. It always ends the same way, doesn't it? Until there's something substantially different. And the thing is that further U.S. control, it doesn't mean sovereignty for Palestine. It doesn't mean, you know, that the Palestinian cause wins. It just means that maybe Israel has to back down a bit.
Nobody knows, I guess, what the end result will be yet. But I guess if we look to especially Iraq and the use of U.S. contractors to essentially act like military personnel in the end and to assert authority over the population in the same way, it's a common tactic used by the military. And I think we raise this issue, one, because being aware of everything is always just like half the battle, but two, to proceed with caution in the same way grifters like Sean King can walk into a community in crisis and be glorified and all his mistakes kind of forgotten. I think sometimes some people in desperate situations like the Palestinians are right now will openly accept, you know, any assistance possible and not have time to be cautious. And I don't actually know what the answer is, like, what do we do about this? But surely at least applying a lens of the same colonial experience that the U.S. has repeated over and over, imperialist tactic, that we go in with at least open eyes and with warnings to our Palestinian comrades that not all aid is equal.